blimey. Guess what you're listening to? Resonance Radio 104. Fantastic. Thank you.
Hello, this is David Icke, author of Alice in Wonderland and the World Trade Center Disaster, on The Headroom with Rob Simone on 104.4 Resonance FM.
Global conspiracies, mind control, the domination of the planet. That's what we're talking about in this interview with David Icke. And we have much, much more to get into on this second hour here in the Headroom. You're listening to Resonance FM 104.4 in London. And this is The Headroom. We come to you every Saturday at 2:30 p.m. London time. Worldwide on the internet. Now, just before the break, we were discussing North Korea and this grand agenda that is being played out in plain sight. Some would say hiding things in plain sight is the best way to hide them. Is that what's really going on all around us? Have we been conditioned to buy into this false reality? Maybe you're feeling it. Maybe this is the Matrix. Maybe all the things that we've been talking about over the past hour have started to resonate with you. If so, let me know. Let me know if your opinions have changed, or what your opinions are, full stop. Why don't you send us an email to the show, and we will consider everything that comes along. Our email address is simply theheadroom@excite.com. We've been coming to you for over a year now on the only independent voice on the airwaves. That's Resonance FM, London's premier independent radio station. Well, let's get back into it, shall we? We have a lot of ground yet to cover. Now, before the break, we were talking about North Korea and this agenda that is unfolding, fighting multiple battles, multiple theaters on different fronts simultaneously, as it is laid out in the project for the New American Century. If you go to that website, projectfornewamericancentury.org, you'll see it all played out. I asked David what your opinions were on the next possible confrontation, and if he felt North Korea was next.
Do you think that North Korea is next under the pretext of them starting up their nuclear program again?
The actual order of who they're going for, only they really know. But the countries that they will go for in some kind of sequence is pretty obvious because it's there. And these people, there was a very good and a rare good documentary in the Panorama series on BBC One recently, in which the reporter actually went around these guys in Washington during the Iraq War and questioned them about what it was all about. And they were quite openly saying the list of countries that they had to liberate, which of course is newspeak for death, slaughter, control, and take over. The thing is leading to China, that's for sure, because I've been told about that long before this document came to light. I was told about that by insiders right the way through the 90s as I was traveling America, as I have extensively and continue to do, that they were ultimately wanting to have a conflict with China that would be the final excuse to move to this world government, world army. Again, a problem reaction solution to bring about peace in the world. In exactly the same excuse used to bring peace in Europe for the creation of the European Economic Community, which has now, of course, been evolved into a centralized super state, which is taking the form exactly as my books predicted years and years ago, which is a centralized fascist state of Europe. And it's interesting, you know, I use this word fascism, but where did it come from? It came from a symbol in the time of the Roman Empire called the fasci. And the symbol symbolizes fascism because it is a series of rods symbolizing individuality, individual countries, individual people, tied tightly together. And there's an axe at the top. This is where we get the idea of the term the Axis powers for the fascist countries in the Second World War. And so you have the axe symbolizing the centralized control, destroying individuality by controlling everything. And that's where the fascist name comes from that symbol. And what have I just described? I've just described the European Union. It's exactly what's happening.
You mentioned the Nazis before, and it's quite interesting. Do you feel at the end of the Second World War that they somehow managed to get out of Germany? I think it was Operation Eagle Fly.
There was another major one called Project Paperclip.
Oh, Paperclip. Well, wasn't that us taking some of the scientists out for NASA and other things?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've gone into this extensively in a number of my books because it's very, very important to understand this.
It is.
First of all, the thing to get across is forget different sides. At the level of the troops fighting and slaughtering each other in the trenches or in the battles of various kinds, yes, at that level of the pyramid, there are apparently different sides. But if you go high enough up the pyramids of those controlling the Allies in the Second World War, and high enough up the pyramids controlling the Nazis in the Second World War, you hit the same people. Because they were creating a massive problem-reaction-solution of global conflict, which is what they want to try to repeat now with the moving towards China to take it to the next stage. And of course, they used the Second World War as an excuse afterwards to find a solution to the problem, which was the United Nations. The United Nations was a 100% creation of this Illuminati, as my books show, and others do too. And it was designed to be a stalking horse, a stepping stone towards the ultimate goal, which is a fully-fledged world government, which is what we're looking at now. So, of course, what happens is when your stalking horse has reached, has run its course, and the time has come to start replacing it with what you really want to have in place, then you start undermining your stalking horse so it can be replaced. And that is why we're having this undermining now of the United Nations. So in the Second World War, the Nazis, and this is documented, were funded by the same people who were funding the Allies. And who were among them? This has not just come from people like me. This has come from people like John Loftus, who's the creator of the Florida Holocaust Museum. One of the very relevant sources of funding for the Nazis was a company called the Union Banking Corporation, which was an interface company between the Harriman Empire, Illuminati in America, and the steel and banking empire in Europe of one of Hitler's major funders, Fritz Thyssen. And so what was happening is that through the Union Banking Corporation, money was funded by the Illuminati families in America, like the Harrimans and the Rockefellers, through into the empire of Thyssen, and through that into the coffers of the Nazis. Now, little question, very relevant. Who ran the Union Banking Corporation for the Harrimans? Prescott Bush, the grandfather of the present president. The Dulles brothers, one of whom, Alan Dulles, became head of the CIA after the war, and the other, John Foster Dulles, became head of the State Department. They were openly and more covertly, when it became necessary, supporting of the Nazis and involved connected to the Bush family, were closed down under the Trading with the Enemy Act because they were trading with the Nazis. Standard Oil, who of course was owned by the Rockefellers, were exposed as supplying oil to the Nazis through most of the Second World War. So you have a situation where the same people were controlling both sides. So it then becomes more logical and makes more sense to realize that the key players that were connected with the Illuminati in the Nazi regime, when the Allies arrived, the Allied troops arrived in Germany, they were removed through things like Project Paperclip to America and to South America and other places to continue their work for the Illuminati outside of Germany and covertly. And I have met a number of people in my travels to more than 40 countries in the last 13 years investigating all this, who were victims of Joseph Mengele, the so-called Angel of Death. Joseph Mengele was an expert in genetics, because these people are obsessed with genetics, and also in mind control. And in the concentration camps of Nazi Germany, he had, of course, an endless supply of victims on which to experiment on. And he developed forms of genetics and forms of mind control, which are massively used today and have been, made more even more effective since. And he was brought out of Germany, this major Nazi war criminal, who was responsible for horrendous treatment of Jewish people and many others too. He was brought to South America and to the United States to continue his work. One of the places he operated out of was the China Lake Naval Weapons Center in California, out in the desert, which is one of the major centers in America for mind control operations. If we see the powers in the world as unconnected, as black against white and us against them, we're going to completely miss the plot, because when you get high enough, they're controlled by the same people, and they're controlled and manipulated to create the problems at the level of the movie which justify the introduction of the agenda, which is the centralization of global power. And, you know, it's interesting, you mentioned there how I put all this research together. I have to say that if I'd have sat down in 1990 and just using my my brain alone to try to uncover this, I might have produced one book by now, two if I was lucky. But what has happened to me since 1990 is that I have had some kind of force, consciousness, whatever, guiding me through this. And as a result, and it's all come from one simple thing. I decided in the early 1990s, when I had an awakening of mega proportions that blew the top of my head off, many people in this country will remember it, that period, I decided that when my head, my so-called logical mind, was in conflict with my intuition, my feeling, I was always going to go with my intuition. So if my intuition was telling me do something or go somewhere, and my mind, from its logical point of view and conditioned point of view, was going, oh, no, you can't do that. What will people think? They'll laugh at you and all this. Oh, no, you can't do, go there. You can't afford it and all this stuff. Then I was going to push that aside, and I was going to go with my intuition. And there comes a point in this process, I found, when you go with your intuition. And when you do, early on, and because I'm a classic example, as like I said, many people in this country will remember from the early 90s, you can get yourself into some interesting situations, some interesting scrapes, for a simple reason. Your intuition is coming from higher levels of your consciousness, not that which is conditioned to believe the illusions and lies of this world. So, therefore, it is looking at events and what needs to happen from a completely different point of observation. It can see the source to the sea, while at the conscious level, the logical mind, you might call it, can only see the next turn in a river. So So to the logical mind, when something happens, because it can only see the next turn, it's going, what are you doing to the intuition? You see what happens when you don't listen to me. But because if you follow your intuition and you don't concede to that, you realize that when you get round the next turn in the river, something happens that is extremely positive and only happens as a result of what happened earlier when you thought it was incredibly negative and, oh my goodness me, I've made a terrible mistake. Mm. And what happens with this process, I find, is that eventually your logical mind observes that although when you follow your intuition, things may get interesting, as you, of course, start to do things that are at odds with the prevailing reality, because you are not seeing the world in the same way that other people are seeing them, because you're coming from your intuitive level. But your logical mind observes this, and it sees that in the end, it all works out great. And it doesn't only work out great despite what happened, but because of what happened. And at that point, your logical mind and your intuition start to come together and work as one. And what happens is what you feel to do and what you logically think to do become the same thing. And this war stops, which is going on in what most people and was going on in me earlier on in my life. And it's as a result of following intuitively my feelings. I need to go there. No, I don't need to talk to this person, even though I could. I need to talk to this person. This is where I need to go now. I don't need to read that book, but I do really feel I need to read this one. And this process has put information in front of my face, not only in abundance and incredibly relevant to what I was doing at the time, but it has put it in the right order, which makes it most easier for me to understand how it connects. And so it's not just David Icke, which is an illusion anyway, it's just a name for an experience that has done this. I have just been following some intuitive force that has led me to all this information and continues to do so.
But what is the source? What is this this guiding force? Have you been able to shed a little bit more light on that?
Well, it started for me. It's a long story, so I won't go into much detail. But in the early 1990s, when I was a television presenter for the BBC, a series of things started to happen to me. First of all, for about 6 months, out of nowhere, I suddenly started feeling that if I was in a room alone, that I was not alone. There was something there. And this kind of followed me around for 6 months, and eventually I was sitting in a hotel room in London working for the BBC, and I sat in this hotel room apparently on my own, and this presence was so strong. And I sat on the side of the bed, and I remember saying, look, if you're there, is there something there, would you please contact me, because you'll drive me up the bloody wall. But enough of it. And about a week later, a series of events happened very synchronistically, and one of them was that I was in a book shop, a newspaper shop, and I was just calling my son out of the bookshop because we were going to go some lunch, and suddenly my feet were stuck to the ground. My feet wouldn't move. It was like two magnets pulled my feet to the ground. And I just heard, not a voice, it was like a very strong thought form going through my mind, and it said, go and look at the books on the far side. And I'm thinking, where the heck did that come from? So out of, you know, being intrigued, and not only that, it was the only direction my feet would move was the direction of the books. I walked across to these books, and I'm looking through them, and I saw this book, and I was attracted to this book, and I turned it over and looked at the blurb, and it was a book by a psychic. And my feeling was, hey, I wonder if this lady, because I was never interested in this before, though I was very open to it, always never accepted religion and never accepted the official version of science either. But it was now in the early 90s when I really started to look at, hey, well, what is reality then if I'm rejecting those two? And what happened was that I contacted her, and I went to see her, and I went to see her on the pretext that I had arthritis, which I had and have, and maybe hands-on healing would help because, you know, the official medicine couldn't. And that was all she knew, and I turned up, and I went through a couple of, you know, hands-on healing sessions, which were very nice, and we talked about other dimensions and all that stuff, very interesting, very open to that. But the third time I went, I'm sitting on the table having the hands-on healing and, you know, just daydreaming away. And suddenly she started, first of all, I felt like a spider's web on my face. And that really kind of hit me, because I'd read in her book that sometimes when other dimensions of consciousness, entities, whatever you want to call it, are trying to contact you, you sometimes feel a spider's web on your face, which is funny because I never have since, but I did then very strongly. And about 10 to 15 seconds after I felt that, this lady, I never said anything to her, kind of launches her head back and said, "Oh my God, I've got to close my eyes for this one." And she started telling me that she was being given these messages to give to me. And the opening one was, and she knew nothing about this is what happened in the hotel room. The opening one said, they're telling me that you wanted them to contact you, but the time wasn't right. And you've been brought here to be contacted, not to be healed, but you will be eventually healed. And then she started telling me that, here I am, I'm introducing the soccer and the snooker and stuff like that on the BBC, and I'm being told that I'm going to go out and tell a story about what was actually going on in the world. There was a great shadow across the earth which had to be lifted. There was a story that had to be told. I was eventually going to go out on a world stage and face enormous opposition, that, quote, they would always be there to protect me, that I would have knowledge put into my mind and wonder where it came from, all of which has happened since, that I would write 5 books in 3 years, which I did to the month, and that one line was, one man cannot change the world, but one man can communicate the message that can change the world. That is not to say I am the one man doing it, but it's just that one man can communicate the message that can change the world. So can many other men who are also, and women who are also doing it now, communicating this message of actually what's going on and the way we're all being scammed and the way our minds are being manipulated. And then a series of other things happened, and I ended up in Peru, and I had this fantastic experience on a mound in Peru out in the middle of nowhere, I was almost like plugged into the mains. My body was shaking with the energy that was passing through me. And from that moment, that was in early 91, I saw the world in a very, very different way. I looked through the same eyes, but I could see things that I couldn't see before. And I could see the manipulation. It was like a veil had lifted. It was like, it's kind of interesting. I'm looking at a lot at the moment of subliminal advertising, and that blows your mind when you see the subliminals in advertising. And there's an interesting thing is that when you look at an advertisement and you can't see the subliminal, it just kind of passes through you. You just can't see it. When the subliminal is pointed out, when you look at the advert again, not just immediately, but like a week, 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. the subliminal hits you before anything else. Oh. So when the subliminal manipulation of us, the movie, is actually pointed out, and you start to understand it.
You see it everywhere.
You can read it like a book, it has no power over you any longer.
That's right.
So to answer the question about who are they, all I can say is that's how it started. And from that time, there has been a force that has opened and shut doors for me to point me down various channels, which have always, always produced information and greater understanding.
Well, this is another point. We don't know who they is, but we know that you have been able to differentiate between the observer and the experiencer, something which you talked about.
Yeah, I mean, the more that I look at this, and the more I look at my own experience and study the nature of reality, the more clear it is to me that there are definitely two very clear levels to us. One is the conscious level, let's call it that. But of course, all levels are conscious. It's just that when you're on Radio 1, you can't get Radio 2, but Radio 2 is still conscious. It's just that you're not tuned to it. So the conscious level, we'll call it. That is an experiencer, largely. And it's interesting that when you look at the experiments that have been done, around a second and a half before the conscious mind decides to do something, move an arm, speak or whatever, the electrical signals have already begun in the brain to make that action happen. And I think there is so much that the basic engine room of human behavior is actually the subconscious level. And, of course, the subconscious is infinity. Just what level of the subconscious are we talking about? Depends which level we tuned into, I suppose. And so the subconscious is so much the key to our behavior. And this is why the Illuminati, with its subliminals, not just in advertising, but in all areas, including political statements and the media, are targeting the subconscious, because they know that if they can program the subconscious with a certain reality, then basically that is the governor of human behavior and human perception. And when I was on the infamous Wogan show in the, back in 1990, and the audience were laughing at me because of what I was saying, because I was saying something different, very different, because immediately after I had my experience in Peru for about 3 months, I was hit by this energy in Peru, and basically I didn't know what planet I was on for 3 months. It was like a dam bursting, and of course when a dam bursts, there's tremendous upheaval as the water moves from the situation it was in before to the situation it's going to be in after the transition. And you've got calmness before, and you've got calmness afterwards, but as the dam bursts, you've got all hell breaking loose in between. And that's the period that that was happening to me with my consciousness. It was like, you know, trying to find rebalance itself in a very, very different situation.
Have you had any of those experiences where your feet have been grounded to the floor since then?
It happened once in that news shop, and then it happened on the bound in Peru. It's not happened since, and I think one of the reasons is the more you follow your intuition, and the more that becomes everything, the more you are tuning yourself and connecting yourself to higher levels of your consciousness beyond this illusion,
yep,
beyond this manipulation.
And you're able to access.
And therefore, yep. Yeah, you're becoming, that is the level that your consciousness is consciously making decisions on behavior and everything. Therefore, there's no need to externally do things to get you to do things or look at things, because your intuition just looks at them. You know, it's like, in those days when those things were happening, if certain things had not happened to me at that first awakening time, I would never have gone across and looked at those books. It would never have occurred to me. But as my intuition started opening up and I started using it, now my intuition says to me, go and look at the books on the far side. And I'll go. And I'll find something that's relevant to me when I do. And I know I'm going to find it, because I know that that's what happens every time.
Yeah.
So there's no need for this stuff. Once your intuition opens, it just becomes you.
Yeah.
And therefore, your mind, your logical mind, becomes the servant of the intuition, in the sense that it then, you know, logically interacting with this world makes things happen. But the one making the decisions of what is to happen is actually the intuitive self. And once you get to that level, the experiencer and the
observer,
that which is observing, actually become one, and they work together rather than being divided as they are in most people. And the thing, and I would make this point very strongly, the thing that stops people from going with their intuition and living their truth, not the truth, their truth, because what is the truth in the end? There's only one truth. We are all one. Everything is one consciousness. Beyond that, everything's illusion, which that consciousness creates. But what their truth is, and what they want to do with their lives, and the lifestyle they want to lead, and how they want to follow their intuitive self, the thing that stops them doing that is the prison that most people live in, which is the fear of what other people think. Mm. Because once you start following your intuition, you are going to do things, live in a way, and say things, and understand things that are at odds with the prevailing reality, which is not based on the intuitive self and the connection to higher levels of consciousness. It's based on the logical lower mind, if you like. And therefore, the lower mind of people who are stuck at that level are going to look at those going with their intuition and say, you're mad, you're dangerous. No, what you mean is they're different. And we live in societies, not least because of the way the Illuminati has set them up, in which it has become a crime or a hassle to be different. Why? Because they don't want people to be different. They want people to be clones of the prevailing condition movie reality. So unless people, and more people are, break through this fear of what other people think. Oh yeah, I'd like to do this with my life. I'd like to say what I really think, but what will my mother think? What will the people down the bar think? And all this stuff. If we don't break through that, then we just stay in the pen. And instead of being our unique expression of all that is, we become a clone of what someone else's reality says we should be. And what happened to me, and everything connects into everything else, is that because I went through that enormous ridicule in the early 90s, in my transition period after that exocet symbolically hit me in Peru, I was able to make a choice between, and I had only two choices to make really in the face of that ridicule. I could go under and I could run away, or I could step out of the fear of what other people think and say, hey, you think I'm mad? Fine, I don't have a problem with that. You think I'm dangerous? Ah, I don't have a problem with that. But I am me, I am free, and I'm going to be me and not what you tell me I should be. Once you do that, then your fear of acting and speaking in a different way removes itself as a barrier for you following your intuition, because when you do that, you're going to say and do things that are at odds with mainstream society.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with David Icke here on Resonance FM 104.4 on your FM dial, and you're listening to The Headroom, and we are discussing the intuition that's locked up inside all of us. Sometimes it squeaks out now and again. But as some of you will recall, I interviewed the facilitator of a workshop in London. It's the Intuition Workshop. And we spoke at length about the potential that's inside all of us and our ability to connect with our higher selves and all the benefits that arise from that. Now, the Illuminati and the knowledge that we've been discussing is a very important historical record. It reportedly began with Egypt, Sumeria, some of the great civilizations who built the wonders of the world. How did they get this knowledge, this esoteric knowledge? Where did it come from? Well, if you were listening a couple weeks ago, we spoke with Jim Mars, and in that discussion, it was revealed that when Moses came out of the desert, out of Egypt, he brought with him a lot of information from the pharaohs, and he had the Ark of the Covenant, and they also had a lot of spoils from their conflicts in the Middle East before they settled in Israel, and they kept all this incredible treasure in Solomon's treasure. And after that, it was pillaged by Rome, and it finally was pillaged once again through the Crusades and ended up in a small town called Rennes-le-Château in southern France. Now, of course, if you are familiar with World War II history, the Germans made an incursion into southern France, into this very particular town of Rennes-le-Château, and it was recovered, supposedly, by by Hitler's top commando. Now, it would then fall to reason that Hitler knew about this power of this esoteric knowledge and was using it as best as he could for his own malevolent purposes. So what are we to deduce from all of this? Well, that there was this great treasure trove of knowledge. Maybe some of it was under the Sphinx. Maybe it was in different places. But it could be this very thing that gives the people in charge their ability to manipulate our reality.
Well, I think the knowledge goes back a long way and doesn't come just from one place. But for sure, the Nazis were wholly based on the malevolent use of esoteric knowledge, which, as I said right at the start, it's not the knowledge that's negative or positive, it's how it's used. And they wanted to gain more and more knowledge, And I mean, when you look at the Nazis, it was based on what's become known as black magic. The whole thing was, Heinrich Himmler was massively into the malevolent use of occult knowledge. And they not only went down into Rennes Le Chateau and all that area, which you're talking about, where the Knights Templar had a massive presence, and you had, of course, the Cathars that were great carriers of much esoteric knowledge, and of course were destroyed by the Crusades against the Cathars. And again, what you want to do is you want to destroy those that carry the knowledge, unless they carry it with malevolence. And therefore, they sent the people in with the Montfort and what have you to destroy the Cathars. But the Nazis also had expeditions into Tibet and other areas of the world, also trying to gather more and more of this knowledge. But the basic understanding they have is the nature of how we create reality, and the fact that if you can create an illusion of division and duality, you disconnect people from oneness. You disconnect people from the full magnitude of who they are. As quantum physics is now showing, as mystics have been saying, and people for, you know, since ancient times, everything is the same consciousness. It just expresses itself in a different way. We are the ocean. What the Illuminati, I mean, we're not just part of the ocean of infinite consciousness, the oneness. We are the ocean, because if you hold a droplet of water in your hand, when you put that droplet into the ocean, where's the division between the droplet and the ocean? The droplet is now the ocean, as every other droplet is. What they want to do, because once we reconnect consciously, because we're never disconnected from oneness, we're always oneness, but we can fall into the trap of the illusion that we are not oneness, and the illusion disconnects us from the power of oneness, all that infinite wisdom, infinite understanding, infinite intuition, infinite love. And so the game is to use the knowledge of how consciousness works and how we create reality to create the illusion of disconnection and duality. Because once you've created duality, you can create the conflict that allows divide and rule. For instance, if you buy the line that people in different races are kind of different people, and not the same consciousness expressing itself in a different way, then you have created a situation in which Israeli troops will go into Palestinian lands and slaughter Palestinian people, and Palestinian suicide bombers will go into Israel and blow people away in Israel. Now, what they're doing, both of them, is killing themselves, in effect, because they're both the same consciousness, expressing itself as a Jewish person, expressing itself as a Palestinian person, and the same all around the world. Those guys who were having orgasms, playing their computer games in high-tech jets, dropping bombs on Iraqis, were actually dropping bombs on themselves, because the consciousness that is the Iraqis is the same one consciousness that is the people in the planes. Now, once you realize that we are all one, the idea of getting a baseball bat and smacking your own self around the head with it, we would think was crazy. I mean, you're on something, you need help. But that's what we're doing, because we have bought the illusion of duality. We have lost sight of the fact that we are all one. Mm. Our minds create three-dimensional holographic illusions which we think are real. And if we think they're real, then we become subject to what we think are the laws of that reality. And what I call consensus reality is the reality, it's like what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. It's that level of us in which we're all connected in what we call the human species. And this collective mind has a collective reality, what I call a consensus reality. It's something in which people are all agreed on. We all agree that wall is solid. It can't be, but because we're agreed on it, we create that reality. Mm. And so when you've got something that is so basic as that, a solid wall cannot be solid because what it's supposed to be made of is not anything like solid, then what the heck else is real?
Shared delusional behavior.
Exactly. And so what's happening is this subconscious, and because we're all connected, the collective subconscious is constantly being programmed by the information we receive through the mainstream and the subliminals that target specifically the subconscious to confirm and program this consensus reality that suits the Illuminati. Now, this is the positive side of this, because it is very positive. People say to me, oh, it's all very negative. Excuse me, it's negative when it's hidden because we can do nothing about what we don't know is going on. We're starting to understand here. Hey, this is a great time to be alive. And what for me is happening is this. There's a process which has gone under the name of the 100th monkey syndrome, where they've shown that once a certain number of a species learns something new, is shown something new, suddenly many, if not all of that species, eventually can suddenly, inexplicably, spontaneously, do that without being shown. They just intuitively, spontaneously know how to do it. What is happening here? It's a mystery. No, it's not. What happens is that those that learn something new or come to a new understanding, they, by doing that, put that knowledge into the collective subconscious of that species. Once it's there, like the internet and the World Wide Web symbolically, it can be accessed by anyone connected to that collective unconscious. And because animals don't watch Fox News or don't watch television programs and read newspapers that are constantly and they don't go through an education system that's constantly reaffirming and indoctrinating this consensus reality, they are much more sensitive to this collective level, and therefore they can suddenly do something without being shown because they've accessed it at the collective level, because it's been put there by those that actually, the pioneers, if you like, that were shown originally how to do something. Now, this is happening.
It's been demonstrated.
Subconscious.
Yeah, it's the 100th monkey phenomenon, and it's this field of mind.
Now.
And it was noted by these Japanese researchers studying apes on a particular island, and they noticed they were using a tool, and then suddenly, after so many of them on this one island could do it, on a completely different island, simultaneously, this other group of monkeys began to do it. And it is often referenced, and it reinforces and validates people's belief that we're all connected in this field of mind.
Yeah, and what's happening now, and I've seen it, because I've been on this road for 13 years now, and when I started out, like I said earlier, very, very few wanted to know. In fact, most of them wanted to laugh, and then once they kind of got bored with laughing, they didn't want to know. But what has happened is, over the recent times, there has been an explosion in awakening, in questioning, in seeking knowledge, in intuitively knowing that there's something not right here. And what is happening is this. I used to say years ago, when I used to talk to nobody, and people say, why do you do it? I used to say, because you can't unhear something. And these events will unfold eventually, and people will go, hold on a minute. Didn't that guy say something about this? And then you'll start to get credibility like that, and this is starting to happen. Anyway, what is happening is, as more and more people awaken to an understanding, to a questioning, to a different reality, they are putting that new state of being, that new knowledge, into the collective unconscious of humanity. And therefore, it's becoming more and more powerful. And the more powerful it becomes, the more effectively it can be accessed by those that are connected to that. In other words, anyone in the human race. It's a bit like if you pour more and more and more and more and more information of a certain kind onto the internet, the chances of someone going into the internet and accessing it get greater and greater and greater. And what's happening is now people are spontaneously, without reading a book or necessarily reading about this stuff, they are just suddenly, hey, there's something not right here. You know what I think is happening? I think this is happening. And what I found so encouraging is when you saw those millions of people that protested against the Iraqi war, the million people alone on the streets of London on one day, when you saw them interviewed, they were talking about the fact that they have never done this before. They never protested like this against anything, but they just felt to do this. And when they were asked why, they articulated an understanding. Not in detail, because they're not necessarily done the research or whatever, but they had an understanding. Hey, there's a story we're being told here, and there's a story that actually this is all about. And so I am so encouraged, and I'm really kind of excited, I suppose the word is, by the fact that we are now beginning to move along a point to a critical mass in the next few years, where the collective reality of the subconscious collective reality of the human race is going to flip, and it's going to flip from a the movie understanding of what's going on to what's actually going on behind the movie, and so it's kind of ironic, but I think it's true that when this network of control appears to be at its most powerful, it is actually in its death throes, because the awakening is going to change the reality on which it is based.
So the more vigorously this is reinforced, this movie, against the overwhelming insurgence of the opening of consciousness, the more it asserts itself to struggle to remain in control, the more that it will be exposed, and the more momentum will build up for its ultimate demise.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is happening now. And this is, like I said earlier, this is why they want to push this on, because what they want is to stop the awakening they know is happening, is they want to create this rigid, George Orwellian, globalized central state. And crucially, the jewel in the crown, is they want the people microchipped. Microchipped in a way that they can be externally manipulated through the chip, mentally, emotionally, and physically, to shut down the awakening that's going on, and to hold people.
So that's their sort of desperate last chance, last ditch effort to regain control. We already know that the U.S. military is experimenting with microchips for identification purposes. People are microchipping their pets and even considering it on babies if it has not already been done so. This is right out of mainstream press. We know that Britain is the most surveilled country in the world. They have face recognition cameras everywhere. They're reading your license plates. They know where you are, your habits. It really is out of control. Homeland Security basically waives all due process. People can come in, be arrested, detained, and it is shocking what's going on. But I wonder, here's a question for you. The long history of alien abductions often involve alien implants. Indeed, there is a doctor or two in the United States who removes these implants, and they are really spectacular in their complexity. Do you feel that maybe this is somehow a cover story for this microchip plan?
Well, I think certainly some of it is, because with the sophistication of mind control now, you can program people to believe they've had an experience, and they will absolutely believe it to be true. They won't be lying at all. They'll be saying what their mind is telling them happened, but it won't actually have happened like that. So that goes on for sure. But one of the things that you kind of find about life, and certainly about the Illuminati agenda, is nothing's black and white. It's always a shade of gray. It's never either or. It's always many different reasons. And when people say to me, do you believe, or used to say, but no now, do you believe in the cock-up theory of history or the conspiracy theory, the idea that you have to choose between the two is utterly ludicrous. I mean, the two go side by side. Not everything happens as a result of manipulation. Sometimes things happen because they happen. But the theme going through history is this manipulation to the centralized state. But there's no doubt that there is a extraterrestrial, or I would put it another way, I would say an interdimensional aspect to all this, because there's no way that this Illuminati, the highest levels where these bloodlines interbreed and entry to certain levels is by bloodline only, there's no way that's being orchestrated only on what we call the human five sense level. You know, again, because knowledge is so suppressed, we lose completely the plot of what we're actually part of. When we look through our eyes, well, first of all, we don't see with our eyes, we see with the visual cortex in the brain. And between information coming in through the eyes, as experiments have shown, and hitting the visual cortex where it registers as a picture, the brain, depending on its belief, in other words, its conditioned, programmed belief, edits what comes in through the eyes, up to, and sometimes apparently more than 50% of the detail is edited, either stuff added in that's not there or stuff taken out that is there before it hits the visual cortex in the brain. So when we're talking about reality, if you can program a belief into someone, then you are going to create a situation in which that belief will edit what it sees to create the reality it believes exists, even though it doesn't. When you're dealing level of lack of understanding, you look through your eyes and you think, A, you're seeing with your eyes, and B, what you're seeing is what there is in the space you're looking at. But what we're seeing is a tiny, tiny fraction of all that exists.
It's a sliver. It's a tiny sliver of the. It's a tiny sliver of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Exactly. So when you look at the unbelievable diversity of form within this tiny, tiny frequency range that we can access with the five senses, what the heck potential forms and expressions of the one exist beyond the frequency limitations of the five senses? And there are entities that can move in and out of these frequency fields, the interdimensionals, I call them. And there is certainly a malevolent level of that, which is ultimately, and then in this book I'm writing now, I'm looking at what's beyond them, because they're just a level as well. But they are the ones that are actually controlling the upper levels of the Illuminati. And so, like in this book I'm writing now, I go through the book with like level one, that's the five sense level, which we've been talking about in this chat. But then there's level two of this manipulation, which is the interdimensional. And then you go to level three, which is actually the interdimensional and the five senses level of it. It's all an illusion we're creating with our minds. In fact, we're just oneness, the only truth, and oneness is manifesting with its mind endless different realities. And with that knowledge, you can go to the next level, which is start to work on how, with the knowledge that our minds are creating the reality we experience, how can we turn it from a reality we don't like experiencing to one that we do like to experience? Because when, and we will, move this reality from a prison to a paradise, we won't move from a prison that's an illusion to a paradise that's real. We'll move from an illusion that's a prison to an illusion that's a paradise. There'll still be creations of our consciousness, but they'll just be a nicer experience.
You know, in talking to you over these past 2 hours, I can't help but to think about your experience in Peru, your awakening, and your ability to go on the world stage as a bit of a lecturer, maybe some would say teacher. I can't help but to think that your life, in some ways, is comparable to the Buddha, who also had an awakening and became a teacher. Has this ever crossed your mind before?
No, it hasn't, because I don't consider myself in anything like those terms. I consider myself someone who is accessing a level of intuition which is guiding him to say, this is what I want to do, and following intuition leads me to the ability to do it and to find out, and then I pass it on to other people. I don't see myself as a figure for people to look at is in any way special. or to look at in any way that it's kind of different. And when people say to me, it's wonderful what you do and all this stuff, when they say to me sometimes, what do you think I should do? And you know what's happening. What should I do? And I never answer that question of what people should do, because the last thing that this world needs is someone else standing up and saying, I've got all the answers. This is what you must do. Once you can point people to appreciating that if they access their intuition, they're accessing higher levels of their consciousness beyond this illusion, then end of story. All they have to do then is follow their own intuition, and they'll follow their own journey. And I don't know what their journey is or what's right for anyone else. I'm just trying to follow what I feel is right for me. I'm not anywhere into the Bible, but I think there's a line in it that says, you can be everything I am and more. The whole thing that I'm pointing out is that we are all oneness. So no one is above anyone else. We're just expressing that infinite oneness in different ways. And, not everyone should stand on a stage or write books, because what a world we'd live in. We're all playing our unique part in making this reality work. What we can do, all of us, is change the way that we see ourselves from limitation to limitless. And to realize that we are not Joe Public or ordinary. We are anything we can, we want to manifest. We are oneness. We are infinity. We are all things. And from that understanding, our lives change, and our ability to manifest our reality and our destiny change. And all I'm doing is communicating information that I find to people, and they can make of it what they will, reject it, accept some of it, whatever. I don't see myself as a teacher, because I think we're neither teachers and we're neither students. We are both. We all learn from each other.
Right. What's next for you, David? More books, more videos, or do you have things?
What's happening? I've got this book coming out later this year, Tales from the Time Loop, in which I'm really going to go into the nature of reality. We won't go into it now, but I had an experience in Brazil when I went into altered states of consciousness, which for hours and hours showed me the nature of reality and how we create it. And I'm writing all this down in this book of what I experienced. And since I experienced that, I've come back and I've started looking at the quantum physics and all that stuff, and I'm seeing that what I experienced in these altered states in Brazil, having took something called ayahuasca, which a shaman in South America been using for hundreds of years to take people into altered states, is actually there. If you look deeply enough, it's actually there in quantum physics experiments. It's actually showing that actually this is how we do it. So I'm going into all this, and I don't plan anything unless I have to. I'm completely spontaneous, so I don't like planning. But the more, I don't know about you, but the more I awaken, the more planning and organization of that kind of irritates me more. I like to be spontaneous. So I basically get up in the morning, and what my intuition tells me to do, I do. I couldn't really tell you what I'm going to do in the next few hours, never mind what I'm going to do with the rest of my life or the years ahead. I'm going to do whatever my intuition tells me. And if the last 13 years are anything to go by, it ain't going to be boring.
It's going to be interesting. Well said. I would hope that would have been your answer. And I hope that in the coming months that you'll join us again here in the Headroom.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Great.
Well, there you have it. The definitive David Icke interview. Truly extraordinary business we covered in the past 2 hours. Unraveling the nature of reality and those who seek to manipulate it. It is a very big story, dare I say, the biggest story ever. If you have any questions or comments, like to get in touch with this program about anything you have heard, feel free. Send us an email. Our email address is theheadroom@excite.com. And tune in next week, 2:30 p.m. London time, here on Resonance FM. And until then, we'll see you next time.